Welcome, everyone, to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. This is Corinne, and let's begin with a brief period of coming within, a brief period of joint silence, joint turning to the Holy Spirit. Allowing your eyes to close if you'd like. And coming to this space within each and every one of us. It's in this space that we connect with the truth. It's in this space that we know who we are. It's in this space that we can release all of our beliefs, our perceptions, the thoughts at the surface of our mind. We can give Holy Spirit everything. And we can put the Holy Spirit in charge as we invite the Holy Spirit to be in charge in this moment, tonight, together on our call, and in every moment. This holy instant we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, a tranquil, open mind, these are the gifts that Holy Spirit gives, and we gladly place Holy Spirit in charge by our request. So taking a nice, mindful, deep breath in and out. And coming together to our perception of right here, right now. Thank you all for being here. I see Holy Nicole has just joined us. That's what I call my friend Nicole. I'm glad you're here, Nicole. We are reading. We are reading chapter 31, part 4. So in the CE, it's page 907. It's called The Real Alternative. In the other editions, it's also chapter 31, part 4. So you can navigate there. It's called The Real Alternative. Sparkle edition, page 710. And I'll just mention again, since we're recording now and a few folks have joined us, that my From Anxiety to Love Masterclass, which will be launching in the fall, is going to be offered as a bonus if you sign up for 1 year of Course Companions, which is the membership site of the Circle of Atonement. They walk you through section by section in the text, lesson by lesson in the workbook. It's a beautiful program, so keep an eye out for an email that will be coming out for that. In addition, since our group is growing, as you feel moved to share or ask a question, I'm just asking everybody to stay nice and mindful about the length of time, just to keep our comments nice and focused so we have time for everybody. So thank you so much for that. So let's read The Real Alternative. Here we go. There is a tendency to think the world can offer consolation and escape from problems that its purpose is to keep. Why should this be? Because it is a place where choice among illusions seems to be the only choice, and you are in control of outcomes of your choosing. Thus, you think within the narrow band from birth to death, a little time is given you to use for you alone, a time when everyone conflicts with you. But you can choose the road which will lead you out of conflict and away from difficulties which concern you not. But they are your concern. How then can you escape from them by leaving them behind? What must go with you, you will take with you whatever road you choose to walk along. And that is paragraph number one. So there are a few things that really stand out to me about this paragraph. So the purpose of the world is to keep problems in place, period. That is the purpose of the world, is to be so utterly convincing that we do not turn to Holy Spirit, we don't look within, because the purpose of the world is to keep the conflict out there, so we try to fix it out there, so it's unsolvable. So we never bring the solution, the real solution to the problem, which is bringing everything to the Holy Spirit. Now, it goes on to say, why should this be? Because it is a place where choice among illusions seems to be the only choice, and you are in control of outcomes of your choosing. I want to emphasize here, this is significant. In the CE, which emphasizes how things were taken down in Helen's notes, a couple of times the word you is underlined, meaning the word you is being emphasized here. So this sentence that I just read is one such example. Because it is a place where choice among illusions seems to be the only choice, and you are in control of outcomes of your choosing. And then it goes on to say, I want to just read this again. Thus you think within the narrow band of birth, from birth to death, a little time is given you to use for you alone. A time when everyone conflicts with you, but you can choose which road will lead you out of conflict and away from difficulties which concern you not, but they are your concern. So here again, we're hearing this word you emphasize, and it's saying clearly that we are taking this little bit of time, and we are saying from the ego, I'm going to use this time for me alone. There's conflict out there, but I'm going to choose the road to protect my peace. I'm going to choose the road that will lead me out of conflict. See how the emphasis is on like this very, very egoic, small s self-centeredness? So from the ego standpoint, we're going to try to find a road that's most palatable to us, that leads us out of the conflict, out of the sadness and problems of the world, away from the difficulties which concern us not, because, you know, we want to find our peace. We want to find our salvation here. And yet, it's not there. So if we're turning away from something that we think is real, and we're seeking peace for ourselves, what's going to come with us but illusions and everything that we think that we're turning away from? Because we cannot find peace by ourselves. We cannot get to heaven by ourselves. A Course in Miracles is not a single solo thing that is just for our individual benefit. This is for the benefit of all. So that's where I'll leave it for the moment. Anybody have a comment or a question so far? Okay, let's dive into paragraph number two. Real choice is no illusion, but the world has none to offer, meaning the world has no real choice to offer. All its roads but lead to disappointment, nothingness, and death. There is no choice in its alternatives. Seek not escape from problems here. The world was made that problems could not be escaped. Be not deceived by all the different names its roads are given. They have but one end. And each is but the means to gain that end. For it is here that all its roads will lead, however differently they seem to start, however differently they seem to go. Their end is certain, for there is no choice among them. All of them will lead to death. On some, you travel gaily for a while before the bleakness enters. And on some, the thorns are felt at once. The choice is not what will the ending be, but when it comes. So this paragraph is so clearly saying that the world has no real choice in it. Every road of the ego in this world leads to death. Every single road without exception. It says all its roads but lead to disappointment, nothingness, and death. There is no choice in its alternative. Seek not escape from problems here. Now, again, I'll just throw this out there. Remember, we do have that way out, and it is through the Holy Spirit, and it is through our brothers. Be not deceived by all the different names the roads are given. So we can literally list out every single problem of the world in all of its different forms, and all these different problems have but one end, and that is to keep the ego dream in place. Now, what's coming up for me at the moment is that, and this is something that's just starting to come through, just some new words are feeling like they're coming through. We've talked on the calls about racism and how that I wrote that open letter, and I think it's very easy to say, well, racism is just one of these problems, of many problems of the world, that leads to, you know, it's just an ego path. But the way that I see this, the way that it's starting to, like, I don't fully have the words yet, but I'm bringing up racism because it's really easy to read this and to say, oh, racism is just one of those problems of the world. I don't need to bother with it. That, to me, is a form of leading me, of my own self, out of conflict that we read about in paragraph number one. That's, if I'm saying, like, I don't need to look at this, I'm trying to find my way out by myself, and that's not going to work. So I'm just having this very gut sense right now that our task, again, is not to try to wake up alone, and the Holy Spirit is not just here for us in and of ourselves, like not just like our solo individual awakening, but it's through each other, and we're being called to recognize, and I'm speaking now to those of us like in white bodies, like to start to get clear and have eyes for things that we never have had eyes before that we just haven't wanted to see. So I just wanted to bring this up as an example because this sounds like it's contradicting the fact that, like, it sounds like it's contradicting, let me rephrase this, I don't want to speak in double negatives. It sounds like it's saying, don't get involved in the world, right? Don't get involved in any of the problems of the world. Seek not to change the world. Seek to change your mind about the world. And yet, we wake up through our brothers, and there's just something big here that is happening, that's coming forward. So I hope that was making sense. Any comments or questions yet? Anybody have anything coming up?
I have a comment.
I heard Tanya, and then I think I heard, did I hear
Laurel? Laurel came in right at the tip.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, Tanya first, then Laurel.
What you said makes complete sense, and what the two paragraphs brought up for me is all things are lessons God would have me learn. What is not an act of love is a call for love. And the way I see that is all situations are opportunities for Holy Spirit to enter and for us to approach each situation, no matter how big or small,
mm-hmm.
as an opportunity for God to enter
mm-hmm.
and for the truth to be seen and felt. And realize.
Tanya, I'm getting goosebumps. Thank you. You just gave words to the second part of what I like was feeling before, but then it just flew out of my head. You're now speaking to the fact that in all of these myriad of problems in the world, just what you said, any situation, however big or however small, so animal abuse, child abuse, name any of the thousands of problems of the world, all of these situations now become an opportunity to repurpose these things, for to invite the Holy Spirit, like you said. It's an opportunity for God to enter and for the truth to be seen. I jotted down your words. That was perfect. Thank you for adding that very, very important piece. Oh, I got goosebumps. Thank you, Tanya. Is that all you wanted to add?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Laurel.
Well, it's hard to come on after that, Tanya. That was really incredibly beautiful and profound. And but I wanted to say that I interrupted watching the movie 13th to come to this call, and how watching that movie and, you know, the actual depiction and the documentation of how people of color have just been so mistreated and enslaved in our prison system, all of that. But watching that and just seeing that in front of me, I was just aware of, okay, is ego watching this, or is my heart with Holy Spirit watching this? And I could feel different reactions that I was having. Like my ego would like first kind of recoil and really being extremely judgmental about it. This is terrible. This is bad. This is wrong. And then my heart with Holy Spirit was going, all right, this is an opportunity for me to expand my heart and my capacity to love, and what can love do about this right now? Mm-hmm. What can I do with love? Mm. So, anyway.
Laurel, goosebumps when you said, how can I follow that up? Oh, my gosh. You just added just so much, because, number one, 13th, the documentary is on my – I'm going to be watching that very soon. I have not watched it yet. And you are speaking to – something so important with, I love how you said that. Is the ego watching, or are you watching with your heart with Holy Spirit? When I think part of the reason that those of us in white bodies can freak out so easily surrounding this topic is because it triggers a deep, deep guilt. And it's intolerable. It's just like, you know, too much. And so that distinction, is the ego watching, or are you watching from your heart with Holy Spirit? That's critical. And then if we do slip into ego and start to feel, you know, horrified and even maybe guilty, you know, it's so imperative. This is our absolute strength as core students. We can recognize that that's what's happening. We can recognize that there's guilt there. We can look clearly and see it and remember that we can turn to the Holy Spirit. We can remember that we can give it to the Holy Spirit, asking the Holy Spirit to show us the miracle instead. So we don't keep that guilt. We hand it over, because none of this involvement in, you know, anti-racism work is about increasing guilt. Is not going to help anybody. It's not going to help anybody. So I'm so glad that you added that. That was beautiful. Thank you.
And just and it's such an opportunity for us to release guilt. That's a good thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So, it is.
That's such a good thing. Yeah. Okay. Thank
such
you.
Such a good thing. Oh, thank you, Laurel. That was so helpful. Wow.
I hesitate to bring this up.
Oh, Paula, go for it.
I hesitate because on some level it really disturbs me. But I was just walking at the lake, and there was an interracial couple having pictures taken. Mm-hmm. And my old background tapes started in my head about interracial couples. And mm-hmm. as soon as that started, I realized, ooh, this is old stuff. and I ask the Holy Spirit for help with it. Like, get this off of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I continued on my walk. Walked down to the beach, walked down to Seagirt, came back, coming back around the lake. And this couple is still there. Now they're on the other side of the lake, and they're having more pictures. And I'm going to tell you something. I had absolutely, when I looked at them, it was like, it was just gone. Mm-hmm. Any thought, any negative thought that I had about interracial couples was gone. They were just people having their pictures taken. I'm telling you, this is the Holy Spirit. This is the power of the Holy Spirit. This is, it's just being awake enough when these thoughts come to say, take this.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't
awake enough,
want
willing.
This.
Mm-hmm. And Paula, you're also speaking to just the complete importance of that radical honesty that we need, because that thought we know is a socially unacceptable thought. Like, you know, the ego will want to clean it up itself. The ego will say, oh, shouldn't have that thought. Let's, like, say a bunch of positive things, or let's just sweep it under the rug and pretend that that did not just come up in my mind. This is the uncovering that we need to do. It's there. You know, supremacy, internalized racism, it's got to come up and be seen and handed over and, you know, to be healed. So we're at a very, very big time, I think, with a lot of people having been shaken in tragically because of George Floyd, but in a good way, that like more people in white bodies are willing, you know, to do this type of thing, so
yeah.
To do this work. So thank you for your honesty, because that honesty is, it's what we need. I'll mention that I haven't started this yet. This is, I'm almost through teaching my summer class, but there's a really fantastic book. It's called Me and White Supremacy. It's by Leila Saad, and it's now a New York Times bestseller because of everything that's recently happened. And it started out as an Instagram challenge where she was challenging people to challenging white women to start looking at their own supremacy. And we think that's a word. That's a hot button word. Like, I couldn't even like say it for a long time. You know, you shudder like, oh, supremacy. But like, it's there, and this book helps you uncover it to do, you know, exactly what we're talking about, to engage in this healing work, this very, very important healing work that's happening now. So just another book recommendation, Me and White Supremacy. Okay. Let's read paragraph number 3. There is no choice where every end is sure. Perhaps you would prefer to try them all before you really learn they are but one. The roads this world can offer seem to be quite large in number, but the time must come when everyone begins to see how like they are to one another. Men have died on seeing this because they saw no way except the pathways offered by the world, and learning they led nowhere, lost their hope. And yet, this was the time they could have learned their greatest lesson. All must reach this point and go beyond it. It is true indeed, there is no choice at all within the world, but this is not the lesson in itself. The lesson has a purpose, and in this, you come to understand what it is for. And we'll get to what that purpose is in a few paragraphs. So this paragraph is speaking to the futility of the world. And again, I know if anybody is listening who's new to the course, this is going to sound maybe really kind of like blunt and kind of depressing, but like there's literally nothing here that's going to work. There's nothing here that works. Every, you know, road that we think we want to try, like, oh, you know, maybe if I have that job, then I'll be happy. Maybe if I was a millionaire, then I'd be happy. Maybe if I was, you know, in a different relationship, then I'd be happy. We go down this cycling and recycling of all these different roads, excuse me. I personally believe across lifetimes, trying to get this to work. And at some point, we're going to come to the point, and I think many of us on this call have gotten here, of recognizing the futility of the world, recognizing that none of these pathways, none of these roads lead to salvation here, you know, in the world. It says, men have died on seeing this because they saw no way except the pathways offered by the world, and learning they led nowhere, lost their hope. But we are asked to go beyond that. This is the point in which we can learn our greatest lesson, that this is freedom. Yeah, like none of the roads here can possibly work. They can, none of them can possibly make me happy. There's got to be another way. And that other way is within every single one of us, and it is blazing and loving and eternal. And as we turn to it and get to know it and remember again that which we threw away, there is our joy. There is our purpose. There is our complete happiness. And so this coming to this point of recognizing the futility of the world is actually the next step is liberation. It's liberating to recognize this because we don't need to spin our wheels anymore. We can instead follow the guide within us and do as we are directed, trusting that we will be led down the road that is what we, you know, for our greatest learning, what it is that we're supposed to do, our purpose. Oh, it's good. And I will pause there for a moment. Anybody have anything you want to add?
Hey, Corinne. This is Courtney.
Hi, Courtney.
Hi. I just had a huge ego thought jump up when we read that last paragraph of, well, okay, so I'm just not supposed to care about my career or friends and all that stuff. And I immediately recognized it as that. But I would love to hear your thoughts on how you can continue to maybe follow a certain path. Say you you want to be an artist or you really want to be a teacher. How you can follow that path while also remembering that those things, you know, won't bring you your eternal happiness, but they can still be
right.
used for the Holy Spirit
right.
function.
Awesome. I love that question. And Courtney, I like, again, what radical honesty and awareness for you to be able to pick up on that right away, like to notice the ego thought and to be like, oh, you know, there it is, and it's an ego thought, so that's awesome. We, you know, the things that we want to do, are they of us, of our small self, or are they of guidance? Are they of Holy Spirit? Most of the time, we might not know. You know, we just feel compelled, like, oh, I really want to be a teacher, or, you know, whatever it is. So what I always come back to is that if we don't feel like we get a strong sense of guidance, and most of the time, I was actually just listening to Robert Perry teach on, as part of Course Companions, a call on Friday. You know, most of the time when we ask for guidance, we have expectations. We've already got, you know, kind of an idea of what we want to happen, and that's not going to bring about clear guidance. But I always go back to this idea of do what you feel inclined to do and give it to the Holy Spirit. So if you feel called to be a teacher, if you feel called, if you feel moved, like, or just whatever it is, even if you, like, want a new car, give it over to the Holy Spirit. Say, Holy Spirit, this is my want. Here you go. And, you know, what you're doing in that act, in that giving whatever it is that you want over, you're repurposing it. Now, it's no longer just, you know, the ego's little playground by itself. You've invited the Holy Spirit in. And so now you can learn lessons that bring you to an awareness that that thing that you wanted is not what's making you happy. It's listening to the Holy Spirit. It's the fulfillment that comes from fulfilling your purpose and from forgiving. So do what you feel inclined to do and give it to the Holy Spirit. Giving it to the Holy Spirit is the critical piece. You know, it can be another thing to be like, oh, you know, I want that thing. And you can actually sit down and be like, okay, you know, what are the ego reasons that I want this? And then what is my heart saying? Like, is there something deeper in me that is drawing me, you know, to that? And just to kind of explore that. Does that help?
Yes, so much. Thank you so much.
Good. I am so glad. Oh, wonderful.
Corinne,
okay, let's see. Jenna.
I have a question that kind of goes off of the last question.
Okay.
So in this chapter, it talks about how, and I'm trying to figure out how to ask this, so please forgive my fumbling. But it
sure,
talks about the roads, this is in the third part that you just read, the roads that would can offer seem to be quite large in number, but the time must come when everyone begins to see how they are alike to one another. So my question that I'm fumbling around to try to figure out how to ask is, if one is asking for guidance and feels led to go a certain way, and that certain way seems not to, be successful according to how the world would judge success.
Uh-huh.
And can that be just the Holy Spirit leading you to that classroom to find out that the road, no,
absolutely,
on this earth, and so that that's where the greatest time could have been learned their greatest lesson, so that it's,
mm-hmm.
And my question, I guess, would be kind of then summed up, does it necessarily mean when we're asking for guidance on the direction that we should go, that things are going to just absolutely work out? Or could it just be that that's the lesson we need to learn?
I err with the second option, that's just the lesson that I need to learn. Because if we get caught in saying that the form has to work out for the guidance to be okay, you know, for the guidance to be accurate, I feel like that's a very, like, slippery ego slope, because then we're judging form. And the Course is constantly prompting us to learn how to see beyond the form. So it might end up looking like whatever the form is like kind of a mess, but there's a part in the Course where it says you've judged your greatest, you know, your greatest gains as your worst failures, and you've judged your worst failures as your greatest gains. We have no idea. Like, we have no clue. So if the situation seems messy and we don't feel like anything's going right and we're struggling, there might be something in us that has opened, that has shifted, that has learned something very deep that we're not recognizing. We think everything's a big failure, but we've actually made some big strides. So,
yeah, so,
helpful.
So that just because we don't think that prayer has been answered in the way that we understand, and that, and that if we, for example, if we prayed, should I take this job? I'm just coming up with something. Should I take this job? And that, and we feel compelled to take the job, and the job turns out to be, you know, what we would feel not in our best interest. Maybe, you know, it's a horrific experience, or we lose the job, or whatever. That doesn't necessarily mean that that prayer wasn't answered.
I don't think that means that the prayer wasn't answered, because we, again, like, I think it's a slippery slope in getting caught up with, like, what the form looks like. It could be that we needed to learn how to speak up in that situation. Like, you know, who knows? And yet, at the same time, you know, the Course does say that, I'm trying to think of the exact quote, all of our needs will be met. Like, everything will be given us. We will be provided for what we need as we're listening to the Holy Spirit, like, to fulfill, you know, our purpose. We'll be given what it is that we need. So maybe that situation was just a stepping stone to another, but I personally feel that even a messy job situation like what you just described could still be what we needed for where we were at that point. point in our learning. If the Holy Spirit was always giving answers that looked perfect, I mean, number one, I think probably everybody in the world would do A Course in Miracles, and I don't know. But that's my thought.
Yeah, and I guess it would come back to, I mean, kind of my classroom, right, is part of it. I have some pretty deep classrooms right now, I think, as all of us are going through, is that everything is to our best, how does it go, everything is working out to our best interest. And that's just something I'm, you know, struggling to understand. So,
I want to add... Thank you for the question. I'll end on this, that there's that course quote that says, what would you, I don't remember the initial words, all things are gently planned by one whose purpose is your only good. You know, perhaps you've misunderstood his plan if you thought that things, you know, were causing you pain. I hear that quote, and what that makes me think is how this idea of, you know, the ego creating time and its adventures, the serial adventures of the ego, and then the Holy Spirit kind of rewriting things, rewriting time. So our painful lessons that we signed up to learn through the ego, we now have opened and are allowing those to be repurposed. And so it's almost like, I conceptualize it as like the Holy Spirit's script instead of the ego script. I don't know that all course teachers would agree with that language, but that's how I see it. It's a rewrite, and we have a choice, again, of which teacher it is that we're going to follow. So in that messy, messy situation, just to go back to that example one final time, you know, if you're doing it with the Holy Spirit, there's lessons there. There's opportunities for growth there. If you're just doing it with the ego, you know, it's going to be a little harder to maybe see the silver lining. So thank you for that.
Yeah,
Anna.
Like a deeper, it's really going into a deeper area of growth to be able to come through these lessons, these hard lessons with the Holy Spirit with a deeper sense of trust. But
yes.
In the lab time, it might be a little more challenging to think that at the end of it, we're going to have more trust and there's going
right.
to be more undoing.
Right. Usually we might be thinking, okay, this is destroying all trust I thought I had, and I don't even know if any of this is real. And yeah, been there.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, I appreciate that. I'm just having these deep thoughts about how a lot of times what I think has been gone to hell in a handbasket is actually the Holy Spirit undoing thought patterns in me.
Right. Yeah. Thank you. And then there's also, too, in the manual for teachers, I've always found it helpful to remember the stages of the development of trust. It talks about the period of undoing, the period of relinquishment, the period of sorting out. And that has always been helpful to me to recognize, like, oh, there's something bigger going on here. I have no idea what it is or even what stage that I'm in, but there's a higher plan, and I can hold steady and the best that I can to hold steady and just trust that all things are working together for good. So thank you, Jana.
Yeah,
great
thank
question.
You. Thank you, Kate. I appreciate you commenting on that.
Yeah, thank
Corinne.
You. I heard another voice. Who is that?
Yes, this is Teresa. And
hi, Teresa.
I think this is just, I'm just fascinated by, Jana just reread the sentence, the only sentence in the last three paragraphs that I highlighted on my Kindle, and that is, the roads this world can offer seem to be quite large in number. But the time must come when everyone begins to see how like they are to one another. And when you read that initially, I interpreted that to mean, it the first part of the sentence talking about the various roads, but the last part of the sentence I took to mean how alike we all are to each other.
Ah.
No, and I am just touched by how the Holy Spirit
gave me that interpretation, because upon hearing it being reread, I think the intent was that it was talking about how like the different roads are. But what really just struck me is in the context of talking about racism, how that jumped out to me as one more example of how we all are one.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah. I just wanted to share that. Thank you.
Thank you, Teresa. That's beautiful. I love that that came through. Wow.
I have one. This is Laurel. I've got one more thing that came up for me in this.
Oh.
When we were talking about the next sentence, where men have lost their hope because they've seen that there's no ways, for me, I immediately thought of in the 12 steps when they talk about hitting bottom. You know, you've hit your bottom. You know, oh, he hasn't hit his bottom yet. And that means, you know, it's like he hasn't hit. And for me, I felt like in my life I hit a wall where everything in my life no longer was functioning. I got sick and chronically ill, had to literally go to bed for a decade. And everything,
oh, wow.
There was no options anymore. There were no pathways that offered anything to me. And it was so shocking at first, but after trying to still find some ways, even from my bed, in the world, when I finally realized there's nothing here, there was nothing left to do but go to spirit. That was it. So the hitting that wall, losing the hope, was the doorway.
Yeah, yes.
Heaven, the doorway to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Thank you for that, Laurel. That really can be the point of our greatest learning, and we don't need to, you know, I mean, for those of us who are already course students, we don't need to lose our hope because, you know, again, we've learned so much already. We don't need to get to this rock bottom. I think all of us have touched that at some point. You know, for me, it was anxiety. We all have our little, you know, dark nights of the soul that come up, and every time I've been through a difficult period like that, there has been an incredible lesson on the other side. There's been an incredible learning, and so I don't regret any of those challenging times.
We are so loved. We're so loved.
We are. We are. Oh, thank you for that.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah.
We do not walk alone. Oh, wonderful. Let's go ahead and read the next paragraph. We'll do paragraph number 4. Why would you seek to try another road, another person, or another place, when you have learned the way the lesson starts, but do not yet perceive what it is for? Its purpose is to answer to the search that all must undertake, who still believe there is another answer to be found. Learn now without despair. There is no hope of answer in the world. But do not judge the lesson, which is but begun with this. Seek not another signpost in the world, which seems to point to still another road. No longer look for hope where there is none. Make fast your learning now, and understand you but waste time unless you go beyond what you have learned to what is yet to learn. For from this lowest point will learning lead to heights of happiness in which you see the purpose of the lesson shining clear and perfectly within your learning grasp. Oh, how I just love those last sentences. Whew, okay. So
that is exactly what she was just saying.
Right?
That's exactly what she was just saying.
Yep, I agree. I agree. I love it when that happens. So, okay, I'm going to start with the latter part of the paragraph and then go back to the beginning part. Make fast your learning now and understand you but waste time unless you go beyond what you have learned to what is yet to learn. For from this lowest point will learning lead to heights of happiness in which you see the purpose of the lesson shining clear and perfectly within your learning grasp. So, again, these low points that we hit, these challenging situations, these lessons, they lead to heights of happiness in which we see the purpose of the lesson shining clear, and it is within our learning grasp. I just absolutely love that. And the reason, one of the reasons, I think, because I have race and racism on my mind, this sentence, make fast your learning now and understand you but waste time unless you go beyond what you have learned to what is yet to learn. I have gotten some, pushback from my open letter. I know that if anybody hasn't yet watched the Circle of Atonement podcast on the course's hidden figure, Ida Bell, the black woman who gave Helen her spiritual foundation, which is like, oh my goodness, how much more significant can somebody play in terms of, you know, having that role in Helen's life? They've gotten pushback too. I don't think from a ton of people, but from some who just are saying, like, this is not, you know, what the course is about. And here, this sentence, understand you but waste time unless you go beyond what you have learned to what is yet to learn. This is where I just feel like we need to loosen what we think we know about A Course in Miracles. We need to loosen all the ideas that we have about it, all the preconceived notions, all the things we even think it says, and come back to what it's actually saying on the page, because what it's actually pointing us to again and again and again is to love your brother, is to love your brother, and that, again, we wake up hand in hand together. I was opened to that. Like, my eyes felt like they opened again when I was actually listening to Robert Perry a few years ago talk just about what we think we've learned about the course that's been taught to us from other teachers and that's been passed down, versus coming back to what it's actually saying on the page. And what we see on the page can be skewed by what we think we already know about it. So what we think we already know about it, I feel like one of the best places we can come to is that beginner's mind, that mind of a child that's like, show me, I'm curious, you know, what is this? Teach me. And just be open to go beyond what we have learned to what is yet to learn. That applies to healing racism. That applies to everything in our lives, to be open to what is yet to learn. Because if we think we've got the course, who is making that decision? You know, like, if we think we've got it, who is the one that's coming to that conclusion? We can go further, and we go further by loosening everything that we think we know. Oh. I'll read the footnote. So in this first sentence in this paragraph, it says, why would you seek to try another road, another person, or another place when you have learned the way the lesson starts, but do not yet perceive what it is for? The footnote says, the way the lesson starts is that all the roads of the world but lead to disappointment, nothingness, and death. You have learned this, yet in spite of this, you still try to muster hope that you will find an exception, something in the world that will deliver happiness. So that's what that was referring to.
Corinne, this is Jan. I keep coming up with a Bible story that I was told, and it just keeps coming. It won't let me go. So I'm going to feel compelled to share this, and I looked it up. For anyone that knows the story of Joseph, his 12 brothers sent him in to be a slave in Egypt. And this is what on the internet, and it just, the story of Joseph has always touched me deeply. Basically, while the brothers meant harm to Joseph by selling him into slavery, they had put him in a position where he was able to save their entire nation. for those who don't know the story of Joseph, I'll let you look that up, and it's a very powerful, beautiful story of how God works. Joseph is recorded in Genesis as saying to his brothers, "You meant evil against me, but God used it for good."
Oh.
And I think that is so powerful, and I keep thinking it, not just in our daily lives, but, and I've looked up, I have a curious mind, and I've looked up slavery. You know, slavery's been around since the dawn of the egoic consciousness, unfortunately. And slavery in all of its forms, in the world of form, would be considered evil. And not that God is going to make slavery good. But I do believe that God can take what's going on in our world today from past sins of slavery and break our hearts open for each other and unite us on God's path of waking up.
Mm-hmm.
And and as we go and look inward in you know, and inquire with the beginning mind, and not feel that we know. For me, I'll speak for myself. What keeps coming up for me when I feel this pull of thinking I know something is that quote that I just love is, "I don't know what anything means."
Yeah.
Including this. Including this situation,
mm-hmm.
I will not use my past learning to guide me now. And that's that beginner's mind of just not using my past interpretations of anything to guide me into this deep learning and allow God to use all of this for good.
Right, right. Thank you, Jana. That was really beautiful. Thank you so much. Does anybody else want to add? I'm checking the time, and this is probably a good place to pause. We're about halfway through this section. Yes.
Hi, it's Nikki.
Hi, Nikki.
I think the person who just spoke. Hi, thank you for having us. I think the person who just spoke gave me a better answer than what I think my ego was seeking. But I was going to ask when you're that Joseph in the situation or the person who was saying, you know, you have that crappy job and you just keep turning it over to the Holy Spirit, was there, on the practical level, anything else besides Holy Spirit, you know, I'm not choosing right, I'm not at peace. But then now I'm starting to think that it's more about just saying, whoa, not even Holy Spirit, take it. Holy Spirit, help me, because I'm thinking, like you said, I'm thinking that all this is real. But I guess I also am asking, is there anything more on the practicality that you would do? Like, you were in the throes of anxiety. I'm sure you've, you know, railed against the universe and, why can't you fix this? Why does this medicine work? Why does this therapy work? Come on! You know, mm-hmm. besides that, giving it up, what other things have other people used? What are the prayers or...
Well, that's a great question. And so are you asking the group?
Yeah, I guess. Or you. Or everybody.
Cool. I'm cool with, I don't have any additional words at the moment, and we only have like a minute or two left. So
okay.
I'd love to see if anybody is feeling prompted to speak, to answer that question.
Uh-oh.
About things that you've done that have helped you.
You know, like
you
when
know,
you're that Joseph
true.
In the situation.
Oh,
this
I'm so sorry. I just heard two voices at the same time.
It's okay if you want to go with the other person. I already spoke, so who else
no, go ahead.
Spoke?
No,
well, this
do.
Is Teresa, and I was just going to say something that I just say to myself, and I'm not sure where I got it. It probably was out of A Course in Miracles. I say, God is my strength. And I say it that way from myself, and then God answers me, you have never been alone.
Mm.
And
I kind of go through a number of statements. God gives me vision, and then there is nothing to fear. So I say something from the Course, a sentence from the Course that has meaning for me, and then I hear God saying, you have never been alone. Mm. It's kind of like a little dialogue that goes on in my brain with the Holy Spirit. And that's all I have to
that's
say.
Beautiful.
I feel like that sounds silly, but it's just what I do.
That is so
it
lovely.
It does not sound silly. It is lovely.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Teresa. Thank you so much. Was there another voice, or Nikki, was that you speaking before?
That was me. That was so touching. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Aw, yay. Paula, did you have something to add? I see you just came on my screen.
What comes to my mind are the workbook lessons. I refer to them. they're really fabulous.
Yeah.
And
I agree.
Lesson 48, there is nothing to fear. That is a big one right there. Mm-hmm. That is huge. Because there really is nothing to fear with the Holy Spirit.
That's true. And I'm glad you brought up the workbook lessons, Paula, because, Nikki, that was the thought that came to mind, is that they are applicable. Like, whatever it is that's coming up in your day, like, that's what you're applying the lesson to. And the whole workbook is about unlearning the thought system that we've overtaught ourselves to remember the thought system that's already within us, our mind training, our relearning, even though we don't need to relearn because it's in us already, but you know what I mean. Oh, so thank you. Thank you, Paula. Thank you, Teresa. Nikki, did that give you some ideas?
Yes, perfect. Thank you, everybody.
Excellent. All right. So please put a little page marker in your book if you're joining us next week, which I hope you will. We're at the top of our time, so thank you everybody so much for being here. I love you all, and I'll see you next weekend. Have a
thank
good week,
you.
Everyone.
Yes,
thank you.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Thanks. Bye-bye.